Headlines: Iran says a regional approach can help Afghanistan overcome its challenges as the Iranian capital Tehran is set to host an Afghanistan neighbors meeting. Protesters in northwest England call for the closure of an Israeli arms company for complicity in war crimes against Palestinians. We'll bring you a report from Oldham, Manchester. And in Brazil, a Senate committee backs criminal charges against President Jair Bolsonaro for his handling of the coronavirus pandemic. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour: foreign ministers from Afghanistan's neighboring countries plus Russia are set to attend a meeting in the Iranian capital, Tehran, on Wednesday. The talks aim to assess the situation in Afghanistan and explore ways to assist people in the Central Asian country. The Taliban said they won't be in attendance. Ahead of the summit, Iran's ambassador to the United Nations, Majid Takht Ravanchi, reiterated Tehran's call for the establishment of an inclusive government in Kabul. He also underlined the importance of providing humanitarian aid to Afghan refugees and fighting terrorism. He said Iran believes a regional approach with the support of the UN can help the Afghan people overcome the current crisis. Pakistan hosted the first round of Afghanistan talks via video conference on September the 8th. Iran's president has expressed grief over the humanitarian situation in Afghanistan, saying the U.S. is certainly involved in the ongoing insecurity in the country. Ebrahim Raisi said Washington does not want the Afghan people to live in peace and security. He said the U.S. is to blame for instability in Afghanistan, as it is responsible for the formation of the Daesh terrorist group. The Iranian president made the remarks during separate meetings with the visiting foreign ministers of Pakistan and Tajikistan. Raisi also met with high-ranking officials from other countries who are in the Iranian capital for the Wednesday meeting on Afghanistan. Now, political commentator Lawrence Davidson believes the conference regional countries are set to hold about the crises in Afghanistan will prove more effective than any solution put forth by the U.S.
Well, it seems to me that the meeting that the Iranians are now hosting is a much more far-reaching and far-seeing and humane sort of approach to this situation than anything the Americans can put together. The approach of governments in this sort of situation is identical with taking things out on the people, okay? I mean, they might put specific kinds of sanctions on leaders, specific leaders and that kind of stuff. But if you're going to boycott these countries or prevent the import of medicines and this sort of thing, you know, you've got to hurt the people. And we realize that from what's been going on in Iraq and was going on in Iraq and Yemen and all that the American government is perfectly willing to do that.
Petrol stations in Iran are gradually returning to normal after a cyber attack disrupted the smart card system used to buy subsidized fuel at pumps. The Secretary of Iran's Supreme Council of Cyberspace says experts investigating the incident have come across signs of a cyber attack. Abul Hassan Firuz Abadi noted that the attack was probably carried out by a foreign country with the aim of disrupting public services. Earlier, Iranian oil ministry officials reported a gradual return of fuel stations to full functionality. They also stated that nearly 50% of the country's petrol stations were already selling fuel at an unsubsidized rate through cash payments, despite the incident. Earlier, we were joined by political commentator Daniel Lazar, who gave us his thoughts on the cyber attack that disrupted fuel stations in Iran.
I mean, my first suspicion is that it'd be Israel, because Israel has the capability, and Israel is clearly out to harass Iran at every opportunity. But Iran has other enemies in the region, and it's possible that they're involved instead. So I really can't be sure who is behind these attacks. This is really an important development. I mean, cyber security, cyber vulnerability is very important, and a wide range of actors are using cyber attacks to harass governments they don't like, and it's often difficult to attribute them to any one actor. So, and that way they're kind of ideal. It's a way of causing damage and being able to hide your own responsibility. So that makes it especially troublesome, and I assume that other countries will face these attacks as well. And Iran seems to be especially vulnerable at this time, but it's very hard to sort of figure out what's going on here.
Iraqi security officials say nearly a dozen people have been killed in an attack in the eastern province of Diyala. The deaths occurred when gunmen armed with automatic weapons stormed the village of Hawasha near the town of Magdadia. At least 15 people sustained injuries in the shooting spree. Iraq's Joint Operations Command said civilians were the target of the attack. No group has yet claimed responsibility for the incident, but Iraqi security officials blamed the bloodshed on the Daesh terror group. The Iraqi president has condemned the attack as a cowardly act aimed at destabilizing the country. The prime minister also promised to hold the perpetrators to account. Yemen's Supreme Political Council has condemned the United Nations inaction regarding the Saudi crimes in the country. It has called on the world body to end its support for the former government of Abdurrabba Mansour Hadi, saying it does not represent the interests of the Yemeni people. Abdul Latif al-Washili reports from Sana'a.
President of Yemen's Supreme Political Council, Mahdi al-Mashat, has sent a stern message to the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres, slamming the world body's inaction regarding Saudi Arabia's bloody war on Yemen.
Unfortunately, Saudi money has weakened the role of the United Nations in Yemen and has changed the world body's political position. The United Nations' primary concern should be the humanitarian situation in Yemen, but it has failed to consider that.
In the message sent to Antonio Guterres on United Nations Day, Mashat called on the UN to stop manipulating the facts in Yemen for political ends. He said the world body has effectively covered up for Saudis during 7 years of war under blockade. He added that the UN failure to renew the mandate of the Human Rights Council's group of eminent experts is yet another proof of how Saudis are bribing their way through the world body.
It was not so much a message of congratulation as it was a message of blame for the UN's negative role regarding what the Yemeni people have been subjected to over the past 7 years. It's a clear message that the UN must play its role and that the international community has failed morally in Yemen. We are ready to support the continued work of the United Nations and its humanitarian organizations and facilitate their operations inside Yemen, but on the condition that the United Nations protects the Yemeni people and stops Saudi violations.
Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a devastating war on Yemen on March 2015. The war has killed tens of thousands of people, including women and children, and has pushed the country to the brink of famine.
Yemenis say the United Nations continues to apply double standards when dealing with the ongoing Saudi crimes against millions of Yemenis. They believe that the Yemeni army's operations are legitimate as it is defending the sovereignty of Yemen, which is the only way forward to put an end to the humanitarian crisis in the country. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
The United States has expressed concern over Israel's decision to build 1,300 new settler units in the occupied West Bank.
We strongly oppose the expansion of settlements, which is completely inconsistent with efforts to lower tensions and to ensure calm, and it damages the prospects for a two-state solution.
Ned Price also said the U.S. views as unacceptable the regime's plans for legalization of illegal outposts. The criticism followed a similar statement from the European Union. Israel announced a plan on Friday that is, while all Israeli settlements are deemed illegal under international law, as they are built on occupied Palestinian land. The UN Security Council, in several resolutions, has called for a halt to Israel's settlement activities. Joining me now from Berkeley is Paul Larity from the Palestine Movement. Mr. Larity, thank you for joining us. So let me ask you this. Do you see any shred of sincerity in Biden administration's criticism of Israel's plan to build hundreds of illegal settlement units in the occupied territories?
It's hard to find a shred of sincerity in almost anything that comes out of the mouth of the current government or any other government for that matter. So in this case, more than usual, because the United States under Biden wants to show some degree of independence from Israel, but Israel, in fact, is running things, and the only thing the United States is doing is registering a complaint, disapproval, if you will. It's not as if it's going to make Israel pay a price for this. Not at all. They're going to stand back and watch Israel do this, and which it has been doing ever since, even before it announced the creation of a Jewish state in Palestine. It was doing this. Ariel Sharon used to say, seize the was it Sharon or maybe it was Ben-Gurion, seize the hilltops. And the idea was to place the population there. They're reducing the population in the portion of Palestine that the world recognizes as Israel, and they're putting this population into the so-called occupied Palestinian territories. Of course, it's all occupied, but putting them there in order to shrink the areas available to the legitimate Palestinian population, to squeeze them out, so to speak. It's like taking a wet cloth. And the Palestinians are the wetness in the cloth. They're squeezing it and wringing it in order to get rid of the Palestinians by putting their people in there.
Mr. Lurity, the U.S. doesn't usually publicly criticize Israel. Where do you think this criticism is coming from?
Well, it's trying to differentiate itself from the Trump regime, which never criticized Israel, and it's trying to show some unanimity with the European Union, which also the criticism of Israel is not strong, but this doesn't cost them anything. It doesn't cost the U.S. anything, and it buys them maybe some approval of their European allies.
My last question, Michael Link, UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in Occupied Palestinian Territories, concluded in a report that Israeli settlements amount to a war crime. That is why, under international law, these settlement activities are all illegal, and the UN Security Council has issued several resolutions condemning and calling for a halt to Israel's settlement activities. Do you think there will be some repercussions here for Israel?
If so, that would be a first. We haven't seen it in the past for this kind of violation of international law. Israel has moved its citizens into areas against the Geneva Conventions and forever. It would be surprising to see it, but Israel doesn't really care for the law anyway. It's only concerned with anything that might actually harm it. And there's been no enforcement of the law.
Mr. Lurity, thank you so much for joining us. Please stay safe. I've been talking to Paul Lurity from Free Palestine Movement, joining us from Berkeley. The UK is home to some of the world's biggest weapons manufacturers, among them Israel's Elbit Systems. Said Pourreza has traveled to one of the company's factories in northwest England that's facing growing calls to close up shop. Here's more.
They're small in number, but they have big voices resonating along the streets of Oldham, Manchester, calling for Israeli arms company Elbit Systems to be shut down. This is the Elbit site in Manchester, and the event here organized by several pro-Palestinian groups who accuse Elbit of providing Israel with predatory drones and other military hardware, accusing it of complicity in Israeli war crimes and in abetting Israel in terrorizing the people of Gaza. Elbit Systems UK, a subsidiary of the Israel-based company of the same name, employs over 500 people and has 10 sites in the UK. including four factories.
Israel is an apartheid state. It's a racist state which is preventing Palestinians from living their ordinary everyday lives. And indeed worse, it's starving them, it's bombing them, it's killing them, it's depriving them of their lands and homes. And it has been since 1948. This factory here, Elbit, is the largest private Israeli arms factory. There's 10 outlets in the UK, and they are all making drones and weapons which go to kill Palestinians.
Apart from supplying Israel with weaponry, Elbit is also a major supplier of sophisticated technology to the British military.
That Britain and Israel have a clear, incestuous, revolving door type of relationship between each of their military establishments and their arms companies. We are fighting back against that here.
In August, pro-Palestine activists took their fight to another level. Direct action against the same site in Oldham, causing disruption to the firm's operations. For their actions, they often face intimidation, arrest, and possible prison time. But they say they're unfazed. Events such as the one today have led to increased public awareness about Elbit and its operations and growing calls for its closure. That, the activists say, is one important step towards a free Palestine.
In Brazil, a Senate investigative committee recommends Jair Bolsonaro face criminal charges for his controversial handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. The panel also called on Brazil's Supreme Court to suspend the president's access to his social media accounts for citing false information about COVID-19. However, Bolsonaro rejects the accusations, saying he is guilty of nothing. The Senate committee is also calling for the indictment of 77 other people, including several ministers and Bolsonaro's sons, who are accused of spreading misinformation. More than 600,000 Brazilians have lost their lives since the start of the coronavirus pandemic.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Nearly 700 European firms have financial ties worth $255 billion with businesses actively involved in Israeli settlements, according to a new civil society report. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Jessica Boxbaum, journalist. This article is published under the heading Report Reveals European Firms Have More Than $255 billion entwined in illegal Israeli settlements. Stay tuned for the first part of this article, please. Nearly 700 European firms have financial ties worth $255 billion with businesses actively involved in Israeli settlements, according to a new civil society report. The Don't Buy Into Occupation, or DBIO, coalition is a joint project between 25 Palestinian and European non-governmental organizations investigating the business connections between companies operating in illegal Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories, OPT, and European financial institutions. The coalition's latest research found 672 European financial institutions had relationships with 50 businesses participating in the Zionist regime's settlement economy. Between 2018 and May 2021, major European firms provided loans and underwritings amounting to $114 billion to these businesses while investing $141 billion. The involvement of these corporations with the settlements through investments, banking loans, resource extraction, infrastructure contracts, and equipment and product supply agreements provides them with indispensable economic oxygen they require to grow and thrive. Michael Link, UN Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights in the Palestinian territory occupied since 1967, wrote in the report. The DBIO coalition found that the top 10 creditors collectively gave $77.81 billion to businesses involved in the illegal Israeli settlements. These firms are BNP Paribas, Deutsche Bank, HSBC, Barclays, Societe Generale, Santander, ING Group, Commerzbank, UniCredit, and Credit Agricole. And the 10 investors, Deutsche Bank, Credit Agricole, Government Pension Fund Global, GPFG, Investor AB, BP CE Group, Allianz, Swedbank, Legal and General, AB Industrialization, and Alecta contributed $67.22 billion. The coalition reached out to 138 firms as well as three corporations highlighted in the report and additional businesses the coalition found to be heavily involved in the settlement economy. Booking.com, BNP Paribas, and Heidelberg Cement and 21 financial institutions responded to the report's results. Replies varied, with some banks wanting to set up meetings to further discuss the findings, while other institutions said they have already investigated human rights concerns with their business partners. The report's authors declined to disclose with which institutions they are meeting, but DBIO said they plan to publish updates in the future. Some of them claim they did their human rights due diligence, but still decided to be involved in a settlement enterprise, which is quite against any of the suggestions or analysis of human rights experts. Dr. Anna Khadir, a legal researcher at Al-Haq, a Palestinian human rights organization and one of the report's co-drafters, told Min Press News. Other institutions said any ties to illegal Israeli settlements are not within their sphere of decision-making because settlements are legal under Israeli law. While they are warranted by the Zionist regime, settlements are illegal under international law. So we still have a lot of work to do to explain how the settlement enterprise actually works and how much it is connected to the Israeli economy, while the Zionist regime itself will not provide enough information or transparency about those links with the illegal settlement enterprise, Khadir said. The Palestinian-led boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement has experienced incredible mobilization recently. American ice cream maker Ben & Jerry's made headlines over the summer after announcing it will stop selling in illegal Israeli settlements. Two pension companies named in the DBIO report also recently divested from companies linked to the settlement enterprise. In July, Communal Landscape, KLP, Norway's biggest pension firm, divested from 16 companies involved in illegal Israeli settlements. In KLP's assessment, there is an unacceptable risk that excluded the companies are contributing to the abuse of human rights in situations of war and conflict through their links with the Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank, KLP said in a statement regarding their decision. The businesses from which KLP divested from are Ashram Group Ltd, Electra Ltd, Alstom SA, Bank Hapolim, Bank Lumi, Israel Discount Bank, First International Bank Israel, etc. In September, the Norwegian pension company GPFG announced it will stop working with Ilco Ltd, Ashram Group Ltd and Electra Ltd because of their activities in the illegal Israeli settlements. In the last decade, Deutsche Bank, HSBC and Barclays have also divested from some companies involved in the settlements.
Food for thought. Hello everyone, and let us ponder on a beautiful formula of solidarity of the Ummah as mentioned by Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. This hadith has also been widely mentioned by both Sunni and Shiite Muslim scholars and is famous as the Hadith Safina, or the statement of the ark. The likeness of my Ahlul Bayt is that of the ark of Prophet Noah. Whoever boards it will be safe, and whoever deserts it will be drowned.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents. For humanity, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. In previous episodes, we were looking at human rights from the eyesight of Amir al-Mu'mineen, the commander of the faithful, Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, and how he views human rights. Amongst the things that we said, he concentrated heavily on the fact that he needs to give people a sense of safety and a sense of security. That's something that he was preaching for. And Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he took measures to ensure the safety and the security of the lives of people, because he understood that the first crime that ever happened on the face of the earth was the crime of the two sons of Adam, Habil and Qabil, where Qabil killed his brother Habil. So they started this crime, and then just mankind kind of took it on as a means of disposing and getting rid of those who you despise or you don't agree with or what have you. So Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, when he looks at the human being himself, he looks at him from the inside and the outside, and he tries to rectify and fix people based on these two scales. So there is a mental capacity to the human being, and there is a logical capacity to the human being, that which is the inner of a person that Amir al-Mu'mineen worked on, and also there is the outside person, an external factor to the human being that he also worked on as well. So if we look at the words and the sayings and the sermons and lectures of Amir al-Mu'mineen, he tries to work on both of these two sides, the inner sides of the human and the outer sides of the human. Let me make that very clear in how he does that. For example, when it comes to people from within, he is constantly trying to preach to them and tell them that there are moral vices that they need to avoid. For example, he says, ثلاث لا يدخلون الجنة. Three will not enter heaven. And the first of them, أولهم سافك الدم الحرام, he who sheds the blood of the innocent, or forbidden blood. Sometimes a person could be not innocent. It doesn't mean that you have the rights to shed his blood. So from that, he keeps lecturing and preaching and teaching people to make sure that they do not do anything that harms the human soul, which guarantees them the right of life. Then he says as well, فَمِنَ الذَّنْبِ الَّذِي لَا يُغْفَرُ, among the sins that cannot be forgiven, ظُلْمُ الْعِبَادِ بَعْضُهُمْ لِبَعْضٍ, the oppression of people towards one another. وَإِنَّ اللَّهَ تَبَارَكَ وَتَعَالَى, for God the Almighty, إذا برز لخلقه أقسم قسم على نفسه, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when he wants to present himself to the creation, he would take an oath on himself and says, let us take a break, then we continue.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. Just before the break, we were saying that Amir al-Mu'mineen was conveying to us a narration that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when he wants to present himself to the world, or to humans, or to the creation, he takes an oath by himself, and he says, by my might, wa azzati wa jalali. So this is on the day of judgment. La yajuzani ubul mudalim. No oppressor who oppressed will pass me. Walau kaffin bikaff, even for the slap for a slap, a hit for a hit. Allah says, walau bimashati kaffin. Sometimes you don't hit a person, you just wipe your hands through their hands in a form of oppression or oppressing them. Allah says, that I will not let go. So you see that how Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, when it comes to the people, he wants to tap into their mentality, into the psyche, as we say, and he tries to change them from within. Okay, so if you install that monitoring system into people, it will guarantee, considering that the people take it seriously, of course, it will guarantee that they will abide by it. Now, why don't I and you harm other people, oppress other people, or take their rights? It's because I'm governed not by law. I'm governed by my own faith. I'm governed by the beliefs that I hold. Now, if you and I can manage to convince people to have this belief, tell them, well, Allah says you will not enter heaven if you're an oppressor, or if you take a life or shed the blood of an innocent. If you try to oppress people even as slightly as just wiping your hand on their hands or on them, Allah will not let you see heaven, or at least you will be questioned severely. If this mindset gets installed into people, then society will change. Now, why isn't it that we see this happening in our daily life and in our societies? Because people are not educated. People are not being taught correctly. The fear of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is not instilled in them. Faith itself is not instilled in them. Actually, on the contrary, now what we see people losing their faith. And there are agendas and media that works in a way where it tries to make human beings more like of animals rather than human beings. It's a world where the strong eats the weak. Even Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he says, as-suratu surati insan, the shape, the form, is a human being. Wal-qalbu qalbu haywan, but the heart and the intellect is the heart and intellect of that of an animal. Because all the animal thinks about is his next meal. And which animal should he kill or attack or hunt to satisfy his desire? We, or civilization that we live in now, is coming and reaching that point where people from the outside, they look like human beings, but from the inside, the vicious animals. And that's why you see wars, you see people killing each other, you see crime, especially when it comes to, you know, that taking the life or taking the security of other people. And then we have to migrate. I had to leave my place, I had to leave my country, I had to leave my hometown, just trying to get that safety. So you see how Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, through that and obviously through the course of his life, he was trying to educate people that when it comes to the inside, when trying to rectify and fix the minds of people, he invested heavily. And if you read his books, Najil Balagha or other ahadith, in terms of akhlaq, morality and ethics, he goes out of his way trying to instill this in the minds of people.
that if you uphold this, if you hold on to these teachings, if you have these morals, then things will be a lot different. The world will be different. So he guarantees the safety of other people by educating those who needs to be educated in order for them to give safety to others. We'll leave it here and we will continue in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The light.
The Philippines is among the countries facing a soaring plastic waste crisis. However, a group of recyclers are working hard to tackle the problem, turning the waste into building materials. The group is called the Plastic Flamingo, or simply the PLAF. They gather bottles, single-use sachets, and snack food wrappers. The waste is then shredded and molded into post-add planks that can be used for decking and fencing. Their products are also durable enough to make disaster relief shelters and urban furniture. The group says the coronavirus pandemic has worsened the plastic waste problem, sparking a rush for protection equipment. Their disposal is a matter of concern now.
Because of the plastic problem we're currently facing, the pandemic, the huge accumulation of plastic use, there's also improper disposal. People are unaware on, you know, how do I dispose these plastics? Where do I dispose of them? So at the same time, we give that avenue also, that instead of putting it in landfills or oceans in general, you know, you give it to the PLAF, you give it to recycling centers like us, and we would recycle these, upcycle them into better products.
The PLAF says surging online shopping is also another problem that they try to address. The group has collected over 100 tons of plastic waste since it started the business in 2019. However, they still have a lot to do. A UN report says some 300 million tons of plastic waste are produced annually, with South Asian countries accounting for 60% of it. A North Macedonian zoo has a new inhabitant. It may be small, but it has certainly sparked a big amount of joy. The baby marmoset was born 3 weeks ago. Its parents are super protective of their precious offspring. That's why zoo staff have not been able to get close to the baby and determine if it's a male or a female. The tiny primate will be given a name after its sex is known. Marmosets are the world's smallest monkeys. On average, they are about 13 centimeters long and weigh up to 100 grams. The adorable animals can be found in a number of countries in the Americas.
The hustle and bustle of modern life has made it difficult to communicate with nature the way humans used to do a few decades ago. Now a giant statue in the state of New York reminds us of the importance of lending an attentive ear to our surroundings. The massive statue named Water's Soul is located along the Hudson River. A woman's head with her index finger pressing on her lips seems she's asking bystanders to maintain silence. It's a work of 66-year-old Spanish artist Juanme Palenza. He says the message of his work is, quote, to call on people to listen to the profound noise of the water talking to us. Water's Soul was made of polyester resin, fiberglass, and marble dust at a Barcelona studio. It was later shipped to its Jersey City site for assembly. The sculpture is 24 meters tall.
You might have heard of Iran's stellar wrestling achievements or about its soccer team, but that's not all. Another sport has grabbed attention too. Golfers now competing during Iran's national golf tournament in Tehran. This year, 90 participants from around the country played on a very unique golf course. It is only 13 holes instead of the standard 18, but that hasn't stopped golf enthusiasts playing the 13 holes and then repeating the last five to complete the tournament. The good news is that the golf course might not stay so small for long. Iran's Golf Federation hopes to bring in more people interested in golf. But for this to happen, the infrastructure must be provided first.
We don't have the space to use the 350 instructors to train the 3,000 registered men and women across the country, so we decided to build a national academy off the golf course. Course number 18 will be used in a competition venue during tournaments and as a training and education venue during non-competition times.
When the course was built decades ago in northern Tehran, it had five more holes. But over the years, fairways were laid across parts of the field, reducing playable footprint. Tehran's golf club has about 300 members, half are women. Golf has been around in Iran for over a century, and most of the courses are in southern provinces. Concerned about endangered animals? If yes, then it will be good news that a Mexican zoo has welcomed a newborn zebra. It belongs to the most threatened of the three species of zebra in the world. The foal made a public appearance Thursday, 10 days after it was born at a zoo in northern Mexico. It's about 50 centimeters tall. Its weight, between 10 to 15 kilograms. The newborn equine raises hopes for the conservation of the imperial zebra species.
We are the only zoo in Mexico that has this species of zebra. Unfortunately, it is an endangered species. Here at the zoo, we are doing everything possible to preserve and produce them so that in the future we can repopulate some other parks.
The imperial zebra is native to Africa. It is the largest of the wild equids, the family of horses, donkeys, and other animals. Currently, there are less than 2,500 of imperial zebras in the wild. That's blamed on the destruction of their habitat, illegal hunting, and lack of food.
The world's largest Ferris wheel has opened to public in the United Arab Emirates. Dubbed the Dubai Eye, the wheel takes the visitors to a height of 250 meters, feasts their eyes on the city skyline. That is almost double the height of the iconic London Eye and over 80 meters taller than the high roller in the U.S. city of Las Vegas. Each full rotation of the giant structure takes 38 minutes. The city put on a spectacular firework and light display to celebrate the opening.
The 38th edition of the International Short Film Festival has kicked off in the Iranian capital, with some 63 films from 32 countries competing in the event. The festival has for the first time turned into an Oscar qualifying event, giving winning entries a shot at the Academy Awards. This is being held at Tehran's famous Iran Mall cinema complex, and it will showcase short feature, documentary, and experimental works. Five Iranian films and 58 from abroad are selected for the grand prize, and the winner will be presented to the Academy for possible Oscar nomination. The jury has members from Iran as well as Italy, Japan, and France. The festival will be running until October 23rd.
Natural disasters often disrupt normal life, but that's not the case with an Indian couple who got married despite their town being submerged by floodwaters. The couple, identified by local media as health workers in Kerala State, managed to reach a temple for the wedding in a giant cooking pot. They could be seen smiling and waving in their ceremonial clothes while two of their relatives were steering the pot.
The couple reportedly borrowed the pot from the temple, saying that was the only option available. The pair was unwilling to postpone their big day, adding an unforgettable story to a country that is famous for many incredible things. Feeling down, it's all right to cry and get help. That's all what a place called the Crying Room tries to tell its visitors in Spain. The Crying Room is part of a building located in central Madrid. It's free and open to the public. The Crying Room aims to remove the stigma attached to mental health, crying, and seeking help. It offers a wide range of services, from a corner to crying, to a phone with a list of psychologists people can call. Motivating messages are also visible on the walls. People have hailed the initiative, saying it helps them speak out about their negative emotions.
I think it's an excellent idea to visualize the widespread of the mental health issue. And I think it's a really fun take on it, to call it the crying room, because of the Spanish expression, if you want to cry, go to the crying room. So it's kind of stigmatized to cry in Spain, as in many other countries. So I wanted to take part in this this visualization of the problem.
The Crying Room was opened in an effort to raise awareness about mental health and well-being. Official data in Spain showed that around 40% of people had symptoms of depression last year. Another 30% experienced anxiety.
The first movie in orbit in the making. Two Russian nationals who travel to the International Space Station to shoot scenes of that movie are now back on Earth. The Soyuz MS-18 spacecraft carrying an actress and a film director undocked from the ISS early Sunday and successfully touched down in Kazakhstan about 3 hours later. The film crew, along with a veteran astronaut, blasted off from the Russian leased Baikonur Cosmodrome earlier this month. They spent 12 days in the ISS to shoot the scenes. The mission beats a Hollywood movie project starring Tom Cruise. The mission adds to a long list of firsts for Russia's space industry.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Fabric cuts used to recreate Vietnamese landscapes. A woman living in the capital, Hanoi, has been doing that for 40 years now. The artist, 61 years old, explains what material she uses to create her artworks.
All the details in my artworks are cut from cloth which is used for oyai, traditional costume, or cut from silk scarves. These are very small details, and I have to get the whole cloth for oyai. I even have to cut them from beautiful silk scarves sent from my friends abroad.
Duke says sometimes hundreds of thousands of pieces of cloth are needed to shape the scenes. The cuts should be put together very carefully. Besides that, the woman has to work in a room without any air conditioning, even in the boiling summers of Hanoi. That's because, she says, the pieces of cloth are very tiny and would easily blown away. Her hard work has paid off. The creations sell for up to $5,000. The Vietnamese artist says her work are a summary of the passion and the beauty she has experienced after traveling across her country.
Materials and methods are vital for an artist who combines them to create a masterpiece. Well, a Brazilian artist has used an unusual material to create a huge, dazzling artwork.
Mondano has drawn a mural measuring 1,000 square meters using ashes from the burned Amazon rainforest. The artwork on the side of a building in the city of Sao Paulo depicts a firefighter standing near the scenes of deforestation, blazes, and dead animals. Mondano says he traveled extensively to feel that sadness and, more importantly, to collect ashes for his paintings. He says his aim is to call attention to the environment in his home country, where thousands of wildfires break out each year.
Be the first to catch the balloon. That's what competitors play to win the title at the first Balloon World Cup in Spain. The competition was held in an amusement park in the northeastern city of Tarragona. Participants had to get the balloon to touch the ground before their opponent could touch it. The event was organized by FC Barcelona player Gerard Piqué and a famous web streamer and commentator.
Get out of your comfort zone and try new things. Today we are very proud to have tried something like that and that it has worked so well and that people have enjoyed it. In the end, it's about people having a great time.
The competition was inspired by a trio of American siblings whose balloon game videos had attracted millions of views on TikTok and Instagram. 32 countries competed for the title. An 18-year-old teenager from Peru became the first world champion of this tournament. He defeated his German rival in a 5-minute final match. For those of you with an extreme fear of needles, this may finally be the good news. A group of Dutch researchers say they are working to create painless needle-free injections. The researchers have developed what they call a bubble gun. The device uses a laser to push tiny droplets through the skin. Take a listen to David Fernandez Rivas, the head of the project, explaining how the process is done within a millisecond.
So within a millisecond, the glass that contains the liquid is heated by a laser. A bubble is created in the liquid, pushing the liquid at velocities on the order of 100 kilometers per hour. And we can see the gelatin, how it penetrates about 1 millimeter approximately.
Now, Rivas says the invention will help ease fear of needles and lower the threshold for vaccinations. He believes the new technology can also prevent the risk of contamination through needles and reduce medical waste. If you're eager to get a needle-free shot, you may still have to wait a few more years before they are made available to everyone.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.